Hello and welcome to the Futuring Podcast. I'm Hansika Singh from Forum for the Future, a leading international sustainability nonprofit working in partnership with business, governments, and civil society to accelerate the transformation towards a just and regenerative future. We've produced a special edition of the Futuring Podcast for our annual Future of Sustainability report, but this year we are doing it differently. Instead of a report, we are bringing insights, videos, and podcasts to capture our learnings as we look back to move forward. In this episode of the Futures of Sustainability edition, Forum's Director of Global Programs, Caroline Ashley, sat down with Archana Sureng, a young woman activist from an indigenous community who is on the front line of the fight against climate change.
Archana, thank you so much for sharing time with us. We are really delighted to hear your views. We can see you're in a very busy place at the minute. I'm sure you'll tell us more about that. Perhaps we could start by you just explaining what your normal life looks like and also what you've been doing at COP26.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here. In my day-to-day life, it's all engaging in research work, writing, field visit, but due to COVID, was not able to go for my field visits. I miss them a lot, going to field and interacting with people, learning a lot of things from the elders in the indigenous communities. So here I am at COP26, and it's been a huge learning experience for me. And I see that for me, climate action is reclaiming spaces. Because we indigenous people have been in the front lines of climate action, and I feel it's really important for us to be part of the discussion and part of this decision-making process. Also, being part of this COP26 makes me realize, and I strongly believe, that I have been able to access this decision-making spaces because of my ancestors, their struggles, and their entire assertion which has been there. So I think it's the result and the effort of them which has made me accessible this position here at COP26. And I strongly believe that for us indigenous people, it's really, really important for us to make choices that how we can participate in this climate action discourse in the different levels or different positionalities, because I also believe that we are all different in terms of the nature of interest, in terms of our capabilities and expertise, but we do belong to indigenous communities and have relationship with nature. And like for me, nature is my source of identity, culture, tradition, language, and source of livelihood. And at the same time, in my worldview, it's also like we are not mere part of nature, but we are nature. And which brings down to me to share about my name, like my name, Archana Soreng. The meaning of my surname Soreng in my tribe means rock. So there are many tribal communities in my areas, in my tribe, whose surname is Ba, which means sweet. There's a surname called Keketa, which means bird. The surname called Dungdung, which is fish. So all of these things, which also makes us realize that for us, nature is not a commercial commodity, unlike other communities. And it's really, really important for us to be part of this process because we have been contributing and protecting the nature.
Thank you for explaining that. You often speak about your family's involvement in protecting and nurturing practice. Could you give a sense of how you've seen our relationship between society and the land and the resources change in your time in this space? And do you think it's changing? Do you think it's getting better? Do you think it's getting worse?
Yeah, I think this is a really important question because, yes, I come from a family like my grandfather was pioneer of community-led forest protection practices in my village. And he, along with the other village leaders, have been protecting the forest in my region, and that's how it started. And along with that, he was of the firm believer that, you know, we need to have a sustainable relationship with nature. If we don't have a sustainable relationship with nature, we won't be able to have a sustainable life. And similar goes to my father. He was an indigenous healthcare practitioner, and also both my parents, my father and mother, have been active in the indigenous issues. It's like they told me that if you really want to contribute back to the society, you need to enter into the policy making spaces, and which led me to take political science and also like master's in regulatory governance, where I had subject called environmental regulation. And that is when I realized that a lot of things which I'm reading in my environmental regulation is something which I have grown up with, something which I have seen in my communities. But the sad part is it's not written by our communities. It is written by someone else. And that's when I realized that, you know, it's written by someone else and they are accessing this basis of decision-making process. But for me, for us, communities are not being able to access this decision-making process. So I feel it's really important for us in terms of being part of this process of decision-making process, which also made me realize when I lost my father during that period is that, you know, our elders will not be with us. And it's really important for us to go back to them, learn from them. And for generation of mine, I think it's really crucial to make a bridge from the elder generation to the younger generation, because if we lose it now, then we have nothing for the upcoming generation. Yes, we have been preserving our traditional knowledge and practices. We all have been making sure that we continue to practice our traditional knowledge and practices. But also, you know, it's not about what Indigenous people do, but it's all about what Indigenous people are, because it's not mere action, but also a worldview, which is really crucial when we are talking about climate action, and which is the different in terms of the discourse. And but I would also like to say that it's really difficult and problematic, because the level of imposition of worldview which is happening in terms of the developmental worldview, I come from a place where we have constantly been made to feel inferior of our traditional knowledge and practices, our identity, where we have been called savage, backward, and now our tradition, knowledge and practices is kind of acknowledged. So I would like to highlight that there has been a constant push in terms of imposition of developmental worldview, and that is something which is really, really problematic, because we have been pushing forward and we have been asserting, but also the amount of penetration and the pushing of imposition of worldview makes it very difficult for the Indigenous people. But also the point is, people are trying to regain and revive and reimagine themselves, because it's also wrong to blame people who have been affected by the imposition of worldview, because I think it's not the people to be blamed. It's the developmental worldview and the imposition of the worldview which needs to be questioned. And similarly, for the people, those who are there asserting and have protected those traditional knowledge and practices without being affected by the imposition of the worldview, needs to be acknowledged for the struggles which they have taken, which is really difficult in this entire discourse and the ocean of developmental worldview which is going on. Again, which brings down to my perspective that Indigenous people are not homogenous. Indigenous people are heterogeneous. Like, we have different kinds of Indigenous people, and we also need to acknowledge what Indigenous people are doing in the opportunities or in the positions they are. We cannot expect the one who is doing something else to be compared with the something else, because, you know, the imposition also has happened for mostly like people, those who have been migrated, people, those who have been displaced. So how do we compare with the ones, those who are at the village, those who are with the nature, those who are protecting, with the ones, those who are displaced and migrate, because they were, you know, they were forced to leave their communities and regions. So I think that's really, really important to also see in terms of this.
Thank you. And I'm sorry for the loss of your father that you referred to. It's really interesting what you were saying about the different worldview. Before we look at what's needed more going forward, in terms of looking back over recent decades, do you think the biggest problem has been that wrong worldview that you said, or the exclusion of the voices that you talked about, or what are the most problematic things that we have been doing so far in the sustainability movement, climate change movement?
I think it would be about the worldview. Because, you know, that's how it starts. Like, the problem starts with the worldview. It's also important, like, how we prioritize the health of nature and people over development and money, which also brings down to be to the fact of is what does development mean. And it's really important to question development for whom, by whom, for what, because, like, for me, from my lens, if you take my land, if you take my forest, it's not sustainable, even if you give me money or jobs, because money will get over at some point of time, and so is jobs. You will not be fitting for that jobs, even if your second generation gives, it will not be there for your third generation. And for that matter, we do have compensation schemes and programs, but it does not get implemented on ground. So it's like, what are we compensating on? Our identity, a culture, a tradition, and knowledge, which is once lost, will not be there. So it's also very important in terms of sustainability. Like, if the people are with the land and forest and nature, they are sustainable. If they are not, if they are evicted from there, it's not a sustainable thing. Because, you know, I would also like to give an example during this COVID, which we I was interacting to an indigenous leader, a young woman, and she was saying that it was really sad for them to see, like, how there was a lot of migration during the COVID from the cities. People were walking back home. But she was also saying that, you know, we are in the village protected because the forest provided us food, because the forest provided us shelter, and because the forest provided us medicine during the COVID, which also brought down to the fact, like, in this time of crisis, in the COVID crisis, it was nature and it was the relationship of the nature and the traditional knowledge and practices which protected us. So, like, for us indigenous people, I think it's mostly worldview, which also lends down to the, if we talk about extractive developmental projects, and if we talk about climate crisis and climate action, which again brings down to the fact of the worldview of, like, how you're treating the earth, how you're treating the people, and what is the gain and the profit we get out of it.
Wow. So how optimistic or pessimistic are you that going forward, your worldview is beginning to be more accepted? We hear a lot about the word regenerative. We hear a lot more recognition in words about Indigenous people now. Do you think something is changing? Where do you think it's going?
I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic because I see things are changing. I know it has taken a lot of time. I know it will also take a lot of time because, you know, it takes time for things to change. But what is important is it's important for us to keep pushing forward to it. Also, we need to make people realize that actually we don't have time. And that's why it's really important to act now. Like, if you are believing in something, if you are listening to something, if you are recognizing something, make the actions right now. And that's why I also feel that I'm optimistic, because I see that there has been a lot of reports and people who have been recognizing about Indigenous people and their rights over the land and forest and their contribution to climate action. And I think I am willing to speak up. Communities is willing to speak up, but it's also important that we see that it is not mere listening but also acting on the Indigenous people. And which brings down to me to the fact that, yes, even if we are progressing a lot of things, like I have seen a lot of reports emphasizing, for example, IPCC report, which is really crucial for climate action, but still I'm really a bit sad to see that in the COP negotiation process, or in the opening remarks of the COP, there was not much, you know, even mentioning of the Indigenous people and local communities, which makes you feel at the time that, you know, we are still fighting for the basic rights of recognition of Indigenous people's contribution towards climate action, and which also makes me realize that we have to go a long way and we need international solidarity. We need support from people to keep advocating for Indigenous people and local communities. Yes, we are advancing, but there's a lot more works need to be done, and we need to keep pushing forward to it, because that's what how it works. We need to do our own work, we need to do our own homework, and we need to keep speaking up for this, because that pressure and advocacy needs to be there. And that's why also I feel what's important at this point of time in terms of Indigenous people and climate action discourse is, which I have been strongly saying, that we Indigenous people should be leaders of climate action and not victims of climate policies, because we see when policies are not made taking to Indigenous people into consideration, it is like making us victim of it.
Thank you. You speak really strongly about the worldview that you bring as someone from an Indigenous culture and inheriting that of your ancestors. But you're also a young person in a space dominated by people who are, many of whom are not so young. Do you think you have a different perspective because you are young, or is it part of your culture that actually age is not the issue and you feel in a similar way to your elders and previous generations?
I think my perspective is mostly different because I am Indigenous first and then young and women, because the indigenous perspective, which is distinct, first of all, because that is something which is missing in this discourse. And then comes down to the young perspective, which we do have our indigenous elders, and that's what is also very important, that given the youth movement being so active and advocating for climate action, it's really important to have indigenous youth in this youth movement of environment. And that's why I would like to see that indigenous is something, is a source of my identity, and also youth is something. But, you know, again, things like, for example, if I say I may not be youth tomorrow, but definitely I'm an indigenous tomorrow also. So it's, that is something which comes first to me. And yeah, that's also which makes me realize it's all about, again, as I said, it's all about worldview. It's all about discourse. And that's what brings to me for the discussion of advocating for what my ancestors believed in. And I strongly feel that it was my ancestors who advocated a lot for this perspective. And it's really, and have got stronger laws in my countries and across the globe in the international commitments. I think it's really important for us indigenous youth to keep advocating for it and push forward for its implementation.
Thank you. And you said, you mentioned being not only indigenous young, a woman as well. And we know that for a long time, women have been bearing the brunt of climate change or climate management. Do you see that changing these days?
Yeah, I see that changing, but I still feel there is a lot needs to be done. People are slowly recognizing that, you know, how much contribution or how much things have been done by the indigenous women. But still, yes, in the decision-making spaces, in the public speaking spaces, still we do not have women. And it's really also difficult for us women to access the spaces with all men full of panels and things and perspective. It's not only accessing the space, but it's also about journey, how you reach to this position when you make your choices and your way through to all these prejudices and all this inaccessible spaces itself is a success and itself is a journey of assertion, I feel, because often we have been told, like, you know, you cannot do anything in your life, you have no career, you have no future. All of these things purposefully made sure that we are not being able to access certain kind of decision, because it's like, it's difficult to travel, it's difficult to learn all of this, field work is not safe for women and all of these things, being researcher, what is this researcher thing, roaming around things. It's like all of those things of, you know, it's there in terms of the career and choices. There is certain kind of things, boxes, like women should do this, that. No, it should not be that. We choose what we want to do and where we want to be. And that's all. I also feel that about, you know, women in leadership is really, really important, because that is what we need at the moment, because it again comes down to the fact of justice, like who are doing the real work and who are in the front in contributing and who are also bearing the brunt. And we don't see them as mere victims or vulnerables, but we also see them as a resilient and also trying and advocating and sailing through it. There's a lot of conversation around, after a lot of effort, in terms of loss and damage in the climate action discourse, but it's also important to see that how are we taking into consideration the loss and damage in terms of the indigenous women or women in general, when they have lost so much of their, in terms of whether it is their life, whether it is the source of income, whether it is in terms of protection, and whether it is in terms of the risk they have been going through. So I think it's really, really important. And that's why I strongly feel, you know, it's not about one person speaking, but we need multiple people speaking. And I strongly believe and feel we have a lot of space for a lot of people. It's just the structural things which makes us believe that there's no space at all. Whether it's young people, indigenous people and women, we really have a lot of space. We have to make sure that we make it accessible for more and more people.
Thank you. So two last things, looking forward. What would you most like to see happen over the next 25 years, say? What would make your dreams come true?
I think one of the most important thing which I would like to see is that a lot more countries committing towards rights recognition of indigenous people over the land, forest and territories, because we still don't have this, along with the supporting traditional knowledge and practices and respecting the worldview in the NDCs of the countries. and those who have in the indices, they have not implemented. So I would like to see this more. And the second thing which I would like to see is more indigenous women, indigenous young people in leadership, and indigenous people in general in leadership, and looking at people and international communities and commitments and plans with indigenous people, making really difference, taking indigenous people.
Thank you. And it can get very depressing working in climate change because there's so much bad news around. So it would be lovely to hear what gives you hope.
Well, I'm hopeful because I feel that it's important to do your work. And I know it's difficult, but the only thing which we can do is do our part of the work, because the other part of the work, we cannot have any control on that on other people do. That's why it's important for us to do our part of the work. And the second thing which I also feel is really important in terms of realizing that this is not a 100-meter race. It's a long run. And we need to be happy with the small achievements which we get, because I may not be alive to see the difference or the, you know, things which I aim or I have been working to. It is important to understand that this is a long chain of contribution, long chain of struggles, and every contribution matters. So I am hopeful and I'm happy because I see things are making difference. Every small things are making difference. And that's why I also feel that it's really important for us to take care of our mental health and physical health, because it's a long run. We all need to take care of ourselves and work. I feel, you know, we can do our part. We cannot have control of what other people are doing. So let's continue to do our part and hold them accountable and tell them we are watching you.
And is there anything that you have learned through being at COP in Glasgow that you're going to take back and do something differently in the months ahead?
Yes. One thing which I have felt that there's a less of representation from Indigenous people from Asia. There is, when we say about indigenous people, it's mostly about people think in the Latin America, which I feel is we do have indigenous people in huge population and numbers in Asia, but you know, there's not of much of representation. And I think this is something which I'm strongly taking away, and we will be working towards to make sure that we have more indigenous voices from Asia, and also to make sure that how we are enabling more of indigenous youth per se to access these decision-making spaces. Because it was really sad, we were trying a lot to get more indigenous youth in the spaces, but because of the accreditation and all of those challenges, it was really, really problematic for us.
Yeah. Well, I really wish you good luck with that, with all your work going forward, both on the ground, getting back into the field post-COVID, yes, and getting into those political spaces. I have no doubt you'll be very effective at both. So it's great to have had your thoughts.
Explore more about the future of sustainability 2021 at thefuturecenter.org/FOS2021 and join the conversation.